Welcome to episode 59 of the Pilot's Journey podcast, where we discuss aviation, proficiency, and enjoying the journey. My name is Stuart Stevenson, a.k.a. Pilot Stu, a CFI and Flight Academy owner in North Dallas.
And I'm Mike Hart, a.k.a. Mike Stu, a Part 135 Bush Pilot aircraft owner and Aviation Safety Magazine contributor in Salmon, Idaho.
And I'm Stuart Stoll, a.k.a. CFI Stu, first officer out of Fort Worth, Texas.
This episode, we have a special guest, Dick Nepenski. He's the communications director for EAA, the Experimental Aircraft Association. Before Dick joins us, we'll just catch up on what the Pilot Journey crew's been up to. Stu, what have you been up to?
Oh, man. Well, when was the last time we put out an episode?
It's been a couple weeks.
What have I not been up to? That has been, right?
It has been a couple weeks. That is a statement of truth.
Yes. What have I been doing? So last we talked, I was, I think it was said I was becoming a first officer for an airline, Empire Airlines. They're based up in Idaho with Mike Stu up there. So I have been really enjoying this company. It's a really rocky first start with their training. They have some initial training issues, but once you get on the line, it is a lot of fun. The ATR is a great airplane. The people I work with are great. It pays well. They pay a lot in bonuses, so I think it's a really good it feels like Empire is the best kept secret in aviation almost, where you kind of don't work a whole lot, but you get paid very well. And their pay scale, because of this pilot shortage here, the pay scale is increasing dramatically. I've already had, I've only been here for about a year and a half now, almost 2 years. About almost 2 years. And I've already received three raises. So substantial raises that they're trying to use to incentivize pilots to stay with the airline and to hire. We have an offshoot, Ohana Airlines, that my company Empire still uses with Hawaiian, and they are now officially the highest paid regional airline in America. I think first officers, I think after a year, first officers are making $80,000 a year now. So that's a lot for a first officer.
Yeah, but they have to put up with living in Hawaii.
That's true.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It's tough. You know.
It's why it's really high. The cost of living is high there. It's why it's the highest. But it's still, I mean, even when you take into account the cost of living, $80,000 for a first officer is still pretty good. With just, you know, 3-4 years ago, $30,000 was a lot for a first officer. So, and that's pretty much what the raise was. They went from $35,000 a year to $80,000 a year. So that's where the industry is going with the pay. It's just skyrocketing right now. And it's a really good time to hit up the airlines because, they're doing everything they can to find pilots right now. The work is really great. I live 5 minutes from the airport that I'm based out of here at Fort Worth Alliance Airport. There's a huge FedEx shipping center here at Fort Worth Alliance. I get up at 2 a.m. I go to work. I get home by 8 a.m. I fly like 2 hours a day and I make a lot of money doing that. And then I have the whole day to myself. I can either go back to sleep or get yard work done or whatever it is I need to do. I feel like I hardly do any real work at all. The hardest part of my job is figuring out where I'm going to get my coffee for the day. Yeah. So I really enjoy it. And everyone that I work with there is, has been a lot of fun to work with too. All the captains, I have so much fun with all the captains that are based here at Alliance. So I want to give them a big shout out. Since this job affords me to have a lot of free time, I started flight instructing again, just to give me something to do during the middle of the week. And I got one of my new students happens to be my wife now.
That could be either very good or very bad.
That's what everybody says. And I think I got to be honest, I think it's really bad more on her side than on my side, because I'm super excited for it. And I think I'm a little too excited. And it's probably, she's probably having to pump the brakes on me a little bit. So, because I keep, like, every second, every time we're in the car, I'm trying to teach her something. And she's just kind of like, you know, maybe now's not the right time for this. maybe you need to hold back a little bit. But I'm really excited to teach her. She's always wanted to do it. She's always been interested in it. She loves flying. She's just never gotten her rating. But now she got her logbook, and she's got some hours logged now towards her private pilot certificate. And it's really fun to see her journey and see how she takes to it. So far, it's being really successful. We're having a lot of fun with it right now. Stu, what have you been up to?
A lot has changed. I still don't get to fly as much as I'd like. The company, the U.S. Sport Aircraft, has changed a lot. In fact, we are rebranding and renaming to Thrust Flight beginning, actually we'll announce that formally at Oshkosh this year. So that's one of the things coming at Oshkosh. We are no longer distributing aircraft. We had differences of opinions with the manufacturer, so we dropped that distributorship last year. And now we're focused primarily on the Flight Academy and then refurbishment of and modernization of older aircraft. The Academy's grown over about 1,000% in the last year, that's actually taking most of my time there, just trying to manage that growth. But on the refurbishment side, we're a primary partner for Dynon now. They've been a leader in the experimental and light sport avionics business for a long time. But now they've got a certified option with an STC for 172s initially, but we're adding more planes. We've got a Seneca done, another 172, and an Aero. And we're adding more models all the time. So that really is kind of a cool thing. It brings modern, safe avionics to the older aircraft that have been limping along and losing value. This will double most of those planes' value. It also makes them 2020 compliant with ADS-B, so that we're seeing a lot of interest. In fact, there's no way we can keep up with it. We're looking for a lot of other distributors and installers to help handle that load.
That's awesome.
Also had some fun stuff personally. Got to vacation in Maui recently, and while we were there, my wife and I rented a SR-22 Cirrus and got to fly from Maui to Molokai, and that was a blast. And one of my ulterior motives for doing that was to make sure get my wife introduced to the plane, and I got one of the coveted "Okay, we can have one of those" responses from her.
Sly dog, that's a good trick.
Come around. We also bought a lot in an air park, and right now we're kind of in the phase of design, figuring out what we want to build, designing and planning a house and a hangar. She designs a house, I design the hangar, and then we'll have to fill them with furniture and an airplane. So SR-22 is the very top of the list right now for that.
What's funny is living the dream. So just yesterday got up at 4 or 5, got to the airport, had to fly, it's essentially a new Caravan EX. So it's the EX Caravan. It has the 875 horsepower PT6 up front. So it's got a little more oomph than the other Caravans we have. And this particular airframe was used in the Sochi Olympics. So it used to carry people from the Black Sea up to the mountains during the Winter Olympics. But it's decked out. It's got the G1000, and interestingly, because it was originally an airframe that was overseas, it has all the antennas for VHF and, oddly enough, an ADF, which is a real interesting animal on a G1000 to have an ADF. So
I didn't even know they made them for
that
G1000.
Yeah, it's a special add-on for so there is it's a separate box that.
What's an ADF? I'm just joking. I know what it is.
It's where they take two stones and a stick, and they kind of make the stick point towards something. I'm not sure how it works. It's all magic.
It's like where you put the pin on the cork, and you put it in a cup of water, right? And it points.
It's very similar to the the way a Cub gas gauge works, you know. But anyway, I flew across from Salmon, Idaho, to McCall, Idaho, sunrise or early morning. Pick up passengers, load of passengers who are basically going on river trips. So we pick them up and fly them to Salmon. Then they hop in buses, go down the river, and end up on the other side of the state after 10 days in the, or a week or two, week to 10 days in the wilderness, depending on how they do their trip. There's a lot of different lengths of trip, and also depends on the water levels. But then I came in back into town. The farmer's market was open. It was like 8 or 9 a.m. So I walked around and then looked down the river and saw some fish. So I walked back to my house and got my fly rod, caught a few fish, then went back to the airport at 11 for my next flight across. Again, when we go from Salmon to McCall, you're crossing the Frank Church Wilderness. And then when I go from Salmon to Boise, I cross the wilderness, but instead of east to west, I go north to south and then transit across the Sawtooth recreation area. So it's just Sawtooths are just an amazingly rugged looking mountain range.
Just on a side note, I have to say, if you ever want to make aviation sound interesting, you talk to Mike, because that sounds like a TV show if I've ever heard one.
Oh, man.
Crossing the wilderness back and forth. You are living the dream here with that. That's amazing.
Trust flying it, wild Idaho.
It is
yeah,
not
flying
not
wild Idaho.
It is not lost on me how lucky I am. Because then I get back, I had to do a lot of math, I'll say, because I had a quick turn when I got back to Salmon. So I picked up passengers in Boise, or dropped off passengers, picked up another set of passengers, hauled them back to Salmon. But I had to get round trip fuel calculated with my, you know, hour reserve, so that I could, when I landed at Salmon, load my Australian family and haul them to Jackson, Wyoming. So I get to go across another patch of what we call the High Divide. It's not wilderness. It's a wilderness corridor that an open space corridor, really, that connects Greater Yellowstone ecosystem with the Frank Church Wilderness Complex, I guess you will. So there's some, animal migration there. And, in fact, actually I went over a herd of at least, got two herds of 200 to 300 elk, in that stretch, which was, I'm scouting my next elk hunt from the air. Usually I do that when I'm flying the caravan back and forth to Salt Lake. So I guess I should introduce the fact that I've now been flying Part 135 for this company for a year and a half, basically, the same amount of time Stu started.
You mean a week, right?
Yeah, within a month or so.
You've only been, was it a week, 800 hours, 1,000 hours, I see.
Around 1,000 hours. I got 600 of caravan time, 120 twin time, and then lots of singles. We fly a lot of different airframes. So we've got 11 different airframes that we fly, ranging from, you know, sometimes we pick the 206 or the 210. We have two Islanders. I would say the funnest plane to fly is the Islander. There's two 300 horsepower engines on either side. It's kind of a noise sandwich. They're vibrating and loud as hell, but you load it with 9 passengers and 400 pounds of gear, and you push the throttle forward. It accelerates, and 600 feet, you reach 60 knots, you rotate. And at 60 knots, full load or not, you're just going straight up, man. It's amazing. It is such a fun backcountry plane. Cause it also, obviously it takes off short. It lands short as well. Stall speed, you know, in the 40s, you know, so it's a slow flying plane which is perfect for us doing the bush flying, hauling boaters to the put-ins on the rivers. So we do a lot of that. And in fact, last year the season was, because we had real high water, we started early because the road was closed due to snow, so they couldn't get boats in. This year we're just now entering the water, where the water gets so low they don't take rafts down the top stretch, or they do, and then we fly the passengers in midway through the wilderness. So we drop them off at Indian Creek, which is a airstrip S-81, Sierra 81. It's a Forest Service strip.
So what are these passengers? So are they like they're just doing this for vacation, or do they have to commute for work like this? Or are they chartering for you?
Yeah, so
like
there,
is this seasonal charting?
Yeah, there's several different. Most of it's mostly booked through outfitters. So we have a lot of river running companies. Salmon as a town is a tourist town with a huge amount of tourism based around the rivers. Where there's the main Salmon River. If you put in on near Salmon, Idaho, you take out at Riggins, Idaho, on the other side of the state. And literally, it's a 9-hour drive to get to the other side. So it's a lot more practical to have the passengers ferried across the state, you know, in an aircraft where it's 45 minutes, as opposed to 9 hours of just horrendous road travel. So a lot of them will pick up passengers in Boise and bring them to Salmon, and then they launch and go do the main Salmon. And we don't see them again then, or we might pick them up then at McCall and fly them back to Boise. That's the back end of the trip where they'll take out at Riggins, drive to McCall, and then we'll pick them up there and haul them back to Boise where they originated from as tourists, basically. And then for people who float the Middle Fork of the Salmon, which is the main Salmon it's in wilderness, but it's a bigger, wider river, more of a family. Well, I guess they're both family rivers. The Middle Fork is a little more alpine, a little more whitewater experience, great fly fishing. So basically people who've booked these river trips, and a lot of them are international. I've had quite a few Australians. The family I dropped off in Jackson, Wyoming, that they were here for a long tourism. So they were in this area doing rivers, and then they were headed to Yellowstone. So basically I facilitate people getting wilderness experiences. And then in the fall and winter, then we start doing UPS peak season. So starting at the end of October through November, December, and even spilling over into January, it's kind of all hands on deck for peak packages. There's just not enough airplanes in the fleet to handle the load. So when let's just say your airplane, there's just two airplanes worth of load and only one airplane, then they just start splitting out the loads so there's a niche market for Part 135 folks to contract with the packaging companies to take that peak load. So that's how winter and fall, or fall and winter, are spent, mostly doing Class Bravo stuff and lots of IMC, lots of icing, lots of fun, a different kind of flying, totally different kind of flying. So there's the time in the turbine or the turboprop is a lot of it's doing that, is doing the boxes. And I think my route, when I was on route, I'd be doing four and a half hours of flying a day, long duty time, because you're flying in the morning and pick up the stuff, bring it to Salmon. And then at the end of the day, you fly it back to Salt Lake, and then I'd hotel it in Salt Lake. But most of my day, the waking hours, are in Salmon during that period. So it's kind of a living out of a suitcase, but at the same time, you're returning to home every evening, or every afternoon. So you still get time at home. But yeah, I mean, in terms of living the dream, I mean, this is just, I get to do so much different kind of flying, whether it's to the big city of Salt Lake, you know, in Class Bravo, or Class Charlie into Boise. We landed a lot of these small town strips. Actually, I think next schedule, I have a student pilot I'm going to fly with on Wednesday, but I'm on the schedule again on Thursday, flying into halfway Oregon. So it's picking up passengers in Lewiston, Idaho, and hauling them to a place called Halfway Oregon, which is a little 2,000-foot dirt strip, and dropping them off so that they can hop on. In that case, I think it's Hell's Canyon on the Oregon-Idaho border is where the river run is. So yeah, it's a heck of a lot of fun, and it's interesting. There's some, like today when I landed, I got applause. So
they were just like, there's a vibe.
I know, it's hilarious.
You had clappers.
What's funny is you get the clapping on a couple different things. The backcountry strips, you get a lot of applause because people can't believe you're getting an airplane into the kind of place you're going. You know, it's you know, you're in this little tight canyon and they can't even see an airstrip. And the next thing you know, we're rolling wheels on something. And it's like, you know, that whole experience of flying right over the treetops to start your descent, you know, as a, at the canyon ridge, and then turn right before the canyon wall so you don't smack into a cliff, and then turn again. And then you still don't see the airstrip for a while. And then it's like, okay, there it is. And you have to come at it from a 45 degree angle and aim at the windsock, because there is no straight in because of the, just the trees and the cliffs and everything. You just have to, you know, waddle your way around to get lined up to finally. And on that one, Indian Creek, it's, it looks really well. It's a long airstrip. It's 4,000 feet long. So you got plenty of airstrip.
Well, I gotta say that I get a lot of clapping when I land my ATR as well too. you know, with FedEx, the only person on board is my captain, but it makes me feel good, you know, when I get those claps.
Well, I also get tips. That's another thing that is kind of funny. I'm now part of the service sector. You know, I'm part of the service industry, so I
that's they always tip you.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine. That's so weird. That's a weird thing for me, because, you know, when you usually do these charter or airline flights, in charter, do pilots typically get tipped in charter? Is that a thing?
You know, I think it's because we're tied to this boating tourism thing. And so it's just part of the fact that, you know, if you were to do an elk hunt and pay a guide, you're paying $5,000 for your elk hunt. You typically tip the guide $1,000. That's just a tradition of that industry. And the same thing with river guides. You know, people are paying, you know, thousands of dollars for these vacation travel experiences where they get to be in the wilderness, no cell phones. You know, it's definitely an experience that is worth having and worth getting. And then, you know, again, part of that is tipping the guide. And since we're in that, we don't always get tips. It's not like a consistent thing, but it sure is a happy thing when someone just reaches over and throws a $100 bill in your wallet, in your hand. It's like, why, thank you. You know,
you know what? I have been tipped. I have been tipped once, and that was at US Sport, Aviation US Sport Aircraft rather. Where I flew someone on a lesson, and I had to come in really late. I remember it was a night flight. Convinced me to come in late to do this night flight years ago to fly this guy around at night. And when we got back, we were done and debriefed, he tipped me. And I felt like it was such an awkward experience for me. I didn't know how to handle it. It's so strange. It's so strange that you get tips. That's cool though.
So your
That's
captain cool. doesn't tip you now?
No, my captain doesn't tip me. The clapping is it. The captain pretty much thinks I should tip him.
So the experience of flying in all the different kinds of flying has been just a hoot. And then obviously one of the other big things is there's a lot of moving parts just for the pilot. You know, you got to do your own weight and balance forever. And yet, you know, you're flying a lot of different airframes, and then you've got to figure out, well, what's the fuel order for tomorrow? It's like, well, geez, you know, I don't even know what the passenger load is, and the passenger load can change. In fact, today was a classic example. I was supposed to go in and get checked out in this backcountry strip. The guy shows up with a boat that he referred to as a paddle boat. And that terminology means a couple different things. It could mean just a big boat without an oar frame, or it could be one of these little rubber duckies that's light. And the boss decided, oh, he's bringing one of those duckies in, so no biggie, we'll put it in the 206. He shows up, and here's this 150-pound bulky boat that's not going to fit in the 206 unless we take the seats out. And that's all, you know, we're running passenger ops with the 206, not cargo. So kind of a hassle to take the seats out just for that load. So quickly we switch planes. That trip's now going to be on an Islander. Now the Islander flight to Boise can't go, so we move those passengers into the Navajo. So I'm suddenly flying to Boise with a Navajo, which there was going to be two Islanders going into Boise and dropping some of the passengers off at Stanley. those had to be rejiggered because the Navajo's swings gear in the airport at Stanley is a real unusual one. It's grass. And then after you touch down, the grass has been worn off and it's kind of decomposing granite dirt. So a dirt strip. And then where the dirt ends, then you get the last 1,000 feet of pavement. So it's okay. Grass, dirt, and pavement. And it's at 6,500 feet, so it's a long strip. But you don't take retractable gear airplane in there, certainly not the Chieftain. So anyway, all the passengers had to be rejiggered. And we're trying to figure out to make sure we get the right passengers in the right airplane, because all that happened last minute, you know, just before I take off. And again, trying to calculate how much fuel I need. You got a lot of stuff you got
to
do.
It's nice to see that we've got Part 91 flyer over here. We got a 135 flyer and we got a 121 flyer now.
Oh,
we've covered the whole bases now. This is great. That's crazy. So we started this, you know, pilot's journey, just the journey where you go. It's weird that we kind of all naturally transitioned this. I recently have gone back and listened to some old podcasts and where we were in the start and now where we are now. It's crazy. It's crazy how aviation has taken these turns for us. It's fascinating.
Well, it's funny because, you know, it's interesting because I really didn't have an intention to make it a vocation when we started the podcast. It was not even remotely on my screen as something to do.
Mine either. I just wanted to rent an airplane.
Well, yeah. I know that's so funny. And you were doing it, Stu, but you really didn't have a desire to push big iron. You just loved being a flight instructor, as I recall when we first started.
I did. Yeah.
And obviously you still do, because that's still what you're doing as your hobby.
Stu wasn't even a flight instructor when we first started.
No, I was still working on commercial.
Yeah. You were still working on commercial when we started.
Well, I know. Yeah. I think I got my CFI rating. Trying to think, I've done two ratings since we've been podcasting, the CFI, and then just before taking this job, I had to get my multi, and now I've got 120 hours of multi-engine.
So during this podcast, I got my multi-engine instructor, my ATP, and my ATR type rating during this.
And Stu, you got your commercial,
CFI, multi-commercial, and ATP.
Yeah, I need to get my multi-commercial.
Do you have your CFII?
What?
No CFII?
No, I've actually started on that again because I put it off for so long, but haven't done that yet. That's on the list for this year is to get double I done and MEI.
Yes.
Yeah, I need to do a double I. I need to do the MEI. And then I actually, and maybe this is a good segue because I'm now at my FERC. I have to do... update my. I've got one student pilot right now. I did a ground school with four students.
That's right. Mike's a flight instructor too. I forgot.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know what, Stu? You really did name Pilot's Journey. You picked the right handle for this podcast. No. You
it
really
has been
did.
A journey, hasn't it?
My God, it's been a journey. What a long, strange trip it's been.
You know, they say pilots never keep the same job for like more than 3 to 5 years. They change jobs. I guess that's very true for me. But it's like you guys are getting into it now, and it's crazy. I mean, Stu's company is changing, and Mike is now a professional pilot. This is awesome.
You know, what's funny is I almost view this as a retirement job, kind of. I mean, ran my company and then I just kind of got tired of it, and I didn't realize how burned out I was, but my wife did. And when I said, maybe I ought to do this, she was like, yeah, you need to. And it just the year and year and a half of doing it, like I said, I've actually been in tears flying over the wilderness because it's so beautiful. I mean, there are some routes I can take, you know, just to go peek into some lakes and basins in the Sawtooths where it's just, I mean, it literally is, the vistas are just beyond belief here. And, you know, and it's like, and I get paid to do this. I get to do this for a living. And
it's honestly the epiphany that I get now. It's honestly the epiphany I get. The Texas wilderness isn't exactly as pretty as it is up there, but, I'll be, lining up on final, making call outs to do all these checklist items before landing and reconfiguring this complex aircraft. And I've got my, Lightspeed Zulu 2s on with the blaring some music through my headphones as I'm just bringing the airplane in, and I'm just like, you know what? This is the best job in the world. It really is. Being a pilot is the best job in the world. Hands down. I'm watching everybody else I know that has these normie jobs, you know who you are, you listeners. And I'm not saying that, we're better than you, but we are.
We're luckier. We're just luckier.
Very privileged. We're very privileged. It's something, and it's not that the fact, I don't really think it's the fact that we're pilots, but I think it's the fact that we really enjoy what we do, right? I think that's what makes it so exciting and so much fun, and why we do these podcasts, because we just love it so much.
Well, no, it's an old cliche, but if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life, and that's kind of where we have arrived.
That's exactly.
And it's not too late for most people either.
No, it is not.
Special guest. This episode, we have a special guest with us, Dick Nepenski. He's the communications director for EAA, the Experimental Aircraft Association. And Dick, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
So what do we have in store for AirVenture 2018?
Oh, airplanes.
That's a wide question.
Let's just start with what we don't have in store, and it may be easier.
Well, we placed the deposit on the hull, so I guess we're going to have this thing in 2 weeks. So let's move forward from there. But July 23rd through the 29th, we're getting ready for, I like to call it aviation's family reunion, because it doesn't matter what you fly, what you like flying. Oshkosh has it, and that's one of the great things about the event each year. But you look around, and whether your passion is vintage or warbirds or home builds or ultralights, there are things going on this year that are going to be a heck of a lot of fun. I'll start off, as we would in EA, over in the home built area. We've got this year, we're going to be celebrating the 10,000th Vans RV aircraft that is flying.
Wow.
And you think about that, aircraft, there are 10,000 of them now flying around the world. So we're going to celebrate that. Hopefully see a lot of RV owners that bring in, whether it's the 3, 4, 6, 8, 12, whatever they happen to have, bring it on in. And, we'll be commemorating that. If you take a look at the Warbirds area, there are a couple of ones that I really like up there. First of all, the 80th anniversary of the T6. And I know we're going to have a lot of T6 owners. They're aiming to say, let's get 80 for the 80th.
So my wife is going to have a heart attack. She loves that airplane.
But you think about that, they're trying to pull that together right now and get those last couple of guys in there to say, bring the airplane. And the one I'm really excited about, though, with the Warbird side, and the guys down in Georgia are working like mad to get it. I heard they had a taxi test again today, was the XP-82. And if you've seen this one, the twin Mustang.
Yes.
There are only 5 left in the world. None of them are flying. Hopefully we'll have one flying, and hopefully the first time everybody will see it will be up at Oshkosh. And that's the hope. And I know Tom Riley and the crew down there are working very, very hard to bring it in. And you take a look at some of those and some of the other airplanes that we have coming in. We've got, for the 100th anniversary of the Royal Air Force, we've got a Gloster Meteor coming in from the UK. And it is the oldest jet flying right now. I think it's from 1946, if I remember right. And it will be here. They brought it across from the UK, shipped it to Virginia, put it back together. So it's due to be up here. We'll have a de Havilland Vampire and a Venom jet from the early days of the jet age from Britain. They'll be here as well. So those will be fun. got some World War I aircraft coming in for the 100th anniversary of the end of the war, and hopefully the winds will be light enough that they can go flying. So all of those things, you know, you go down to the vintage area, and we've got some of the airplanes coming in. I know they're talking about bringing in 3 Spartan executives, and those are rare airplanes and beautiful airplanes. And those will be coming in as well. And, you know, I always say at your local airport, if you see a Beech Stagger wing, it's a great day. When that comes in, and when you get up to 10 or 12 of them parked in one place, that's Oshkosh. That's what we're looking forward to there. So, you know, we have all of those coming in. A lot of home builds down in the ultralight area. We're going to be expanding the Twilight Flight Fest that we started last year with everything from the Valdez short takeoff and landing guys to powered parachutes to ultralights to some 3D helicopter drones to, you know, just about powered the paragliders. That team will be back once again. So all of that. And speaking of drones, one thing that we've got as well, just announced the end of last week, during the night air shows on the 25th and the 28th, we're going to have 100 lighted drones as part of the air show. As far as we know, it's the first time that number of drones have been incorporated into an actual air show. And so that will be part of the night air show. There'll be music, they'll be lit up and doing some formation flying and a lot of things that they can do from what we've seen on the video. So I think I've just scratched the surface a little bit.
So what led you to get the drones for the air show? I'm really excited for the night air shows are some of my favorite parts of Air Venture. And I'm super excited to see this drone show.
Yeah, well, there are only 2 companies authorized by the FAA to do it. One of them is Intel. And a couple of years ago, we talked to them and they said how much they wanted. They showed us a number and we said, okay, thank you. And then the other company is the Great Lakes Drone Company out of Michigan. And they've done some performances, for instance, over Niagara Falls and some other public events. And they got talking to us and said, you know, we would love to come to Oshkosh just to be part of Oshkosh. And they've got a couple of pilots in the group. And so we started talking with them and they say, yeah, we'd like to do it. And then it becomes paperwork with the FAA. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so because when you do something like this in the middle of an air show, there is no guide or checklist because it's never been done before. So hence, we got to spend time with the FAA and the National Air Show Office and the Milwaukee FISDO and everybody were excellent, working with them, trying to find a way to get it done. And about a week ago, we finally got it done, got it all signed off and said, okay, let's give it a try. So, you know, one of the things we have to worry about, of course, is we have the fireworks and the wall of fire at the end of the night air show. And so all of that stuff is sitting out there. And so you have to be cognizant.
That was something I was really worried about. Because lately, especially down here in Texas and around California, the heat is causing a lot of burn bans. And we just had the 4th of July recently to where we couldn't even shoot off fireworks in a lot of our counties. And people were coming in with these drone air shows to supplement the counties that couldn't do the fireworks. And so I was worried that that's why you guys just announced the drones that maybe you weren't going to be able to do the wall of fire, but it sounds like it's the whole package. That's super exciting.
Yeah, it's the whole package. It's a plus one on the night air show. So, wow. And I know I was talking to our air ops guy and he keeps saying the Wednesday night show, I think is the best one we've ever put together. And, you know, I've seen a lot. I've seen all the night air shows, including last year on Wednesday night, watching the fireworks through the rain, which was kind of interesting. I'd never seen that before. You know, it kind of looked like you were looking through a prism. It broke into all the different colors. And, you know, the wall of fire that night was kind of the wall of poofed. But we made up for it on Saturday night.
When was the first night air show at Air Venture?
That was 2010.
You know, it's one of those things where I swear it was, I was there for the first night air show.
We were all, there for it.
I think
it.
We had a s'mores party at that night.
We did.
Yeah, I remember that. And, you know, it's one of those things. Had talked about it for a couple of years and how would this work? And, you know, some places had a night air show and kind of toyed with it. Could we do it at Oshkosh? You know, and we were all thinking, boy, will people stay? Will they be doing something else? Will it, you know, what happens? We line this up. Can we find the performers? The first night we did it, 25,000 people stayed on the flight line and watched the thing. And you went, okay, I think we've got something here. And we went about 3 years, and then people started telling us, you know, it's on Saturday night. I have to leave before Saturday. I have to fly back to wherever in the country and get back to work on Monday. Could you guys do it sooner? Well, we thought about it and said, well, let's do a second one. Let's on Wednesday night. So the last 5 years, I believe, we've gone Wednesday and Saturday nights with the night air shows. And we'd like to change it up a little bit between the two shows, just so people who are there throughout the week have an opportunity to see something different. But it has been a big hit and something that we really love doing. The performers love doing. And it's just got a whole different vibe, especially to people who have never seen one before. It is a completely different experience, and one that's become, in just 8 years now, a tradition at Oshkosh.
You know, I remember seeing the Matt Yonkin doing the DC3, or no, not the Beach 18.
Yeah,
the Twin Beach. And it was just sublime. I just don't know how else to describe it, because his performance in general is that way. And then you do it at night, and it just, again, and then seeing it at AirVenture in 2010, it just took it to another level.
I have to say that was probably my favorite experience in the 2010 AirVenture. Not only that, but the fireworks display is really impressive too. They really, I haven't seen a fireworks display that was so perfectly synced to music before. Like, I've seen some impressive fireworks before, but this is like, the music is so catchy with the fireworks. It was perfect.
Yeah, it really worked out well. And that's a local fireworks company up from Green Bay that does that. And they did a tremendous job. My favorite one from the night air show was the first year Bob Carlton flying the sailplane.
The glider. Yes. Yeah, the motor glider. Was that the jet motor glider or the jet glider, right?
Yep.
Yeah, because I remember when I was there, I remember sitting in it and then seeing it in the night air show. It's like, I've sat in this plane. This is insane.
That was a really good performance, yeah.
Oh, it was tremendous with the pyrotechnics and the music that Bob had chosen for the performance, and those times when the engine is off, when all you hear is the wind over the wings. And it's just, you talked about sublime, and that was one. I made a rookie mistake that year, because I've watched enough afternoon air shows. After a while, you can almost do the narration. But I made a rookie mistake when I was watching that. I ran into somebody on the flight line because I was walking along staring up at that performance with my mouth hanging open. And I just ran in. Excuse me, pardon me, because this was something completely different, and what a tremendous addition. So we're looking forward to having that again this year too.
You know, that's one of the things that's really amazing about AirVenture is the whole, it sounds kind of goofy, but where you see, you just look up and it's like, oh, there's Matt Yonkin, or there's, doing a Lam Shavak, or Sean Tucker, or the helicopter.
Well, last year, the Thunderbirds? Was it Thunderbirds last year?
Oh, the Blues last year.
Blues last year. Yeah, it was Thunderbirds 2 years ago. Sorry, I actually missed last year because my birth of my daughter was the month after, and I couldn't make it.
No, you need to get your priorities straight. I know.
I was there. I believe that the last time I was there was Thunderbirds was 2 years ago. But
push, push, push. My pre-flight's almost done.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I've got a story on that too. In 1994, my middle child, my daughter, was born the Saturday before AirVenture. Oh. And and my wife, who is up for sainthood, by the way, just one of the most understanding women that you will ever meet. And my daughter had the great and good sense to be born in 45 minutes, because I've got to go get ready for press headquarters and get all the media coming in. And so,
That's very thoughtful of her.
She is. Yep. And so,
I was just going to say, what was her airspeed coming out?
I kid her. She almost fell out in the hall, and so it was, but that was mine too. And so people talk about that. I can say, yeah, I've been there. I know what that's like, and,
what's funny is I think if Stu's wife were pregnant again and had to, and was near term, she might just show up at AirVenture to have a kid on the flight line.
Well,
how many T6s are there?
Yes. Well, okay. For our first, yes, exactly. For our firstborn, though, she was there. What was it? Six. She traveled up there. We're from Texas, right? So she traveled up there. I think 7 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And camped for the whole 7 days. She camped
outside. That's a trooper right there.
Yes, yeah. That's how much she loves their
country. She is a goddess.
Yes. Absolutely. So you're packing so much stuff in AirVenture. Are we going to have this? Is this air show going to be about 2 weeks soon? Is it going to be a 2 week air show soon?
Yeah, I wish.
Because I'm wanting to camp for about 20 days.
Let's see. If you leave now and stay through the entire week, you'll be right about 20 days by the time Sunday comes around, the 29th.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I think Larry Overstreet probably is there for that many days.
Larry Overstreet arrives in Camp Scholler to stake out all our campsites here tomorrow, I think.
Okay.
So, and you know, there you go.
Yeah, when you talk about that, we've got volunteers who show up. The campground opened the 29th of June, and we have a bunch of volunteers who came in. They're staying. They're helping us do everything from plant flowers to build picnic tables to cut grass to, you know, paint buildings and everything else. And, you know, I've got to give those folks a lot of credit. You know, get 5,000 volunteers here and doing a little bit of everything. And there are entire areas that are run completely by volunteers. And God bless them, because they do such a marvelous job out there and put things together. It's fun to welcome them back each year. And I talk about a family reunion, and that's a part of it. Seeing everybody come back and pick up. It's almost like you never stop the conversation for 11 plus months. You just pick it up again where you left it off.
You get 5,000 volunteers, but also typically how many people attend the show each year?
Well, last year we had total attendance of about 590,000. And
holy cow. Let me just let that soak in a little bit.
That's somewhere over the population of Boise, probably. I'm not sure.
Well, I like to kid with the people who just camp at AirVenture. That's about 40,000 during the course of the week. And Oshkosh is about 66,000 as a city. So I say we take the second largest city in the county and plunk it next to the largest city in the county for 1 week. And it is. It's an aviation city. And fortunately, we all speak airplane, which is a lot of fun because we don't have to explain to our neighbors all about aviation and flying and why we do it and why it's fun and why the airplane is worth more than our house and all of those type of things. Everybody speaks the language, and that's what makes it so great.
You know, it's interesting. I had a passenger on one of my flights 2 days ago, and don't know exactly what context AirVenture came up, but I said, I think it's, you know, at least 10,000 airplanes coming in and landing. So it's the busiest airport in the world right then. Is 10,000 a reasonable number? Because now I'm going to try to aggregate good statistics so I can be out there being your propaganda minister out here.
And I appreciate that. And it's about 10,000 airplanes that come to the area. We become the busiest airport in the world. Last year we had 17,600 aircraft movements during the course of the 10 days. And just to give everybody a comparison, peak day at O'Hare or Hartsfield is about 2,200 to 2,500 aircraft movements over a 24-hour day. Our peak day last year was 3,300 movements in a 14-hour day. And so you start doing the math on that. It's incredible.
Well, and that, you know, so I described the size, you know, how big an event was. And you know, and it's interesting because it really is. It's hard, you know, when you're describing it to a non-aviation person or a non-aviator, when you describe the scale, if they have any sense of you know, population dynamics or events, I mean, it's seriously, it's a happening. It is on a scale that is there are very, very few events of, you know, whether it's you know, what's funny is I can't think of anything comparable, whether there's country music things or rock concerts. Or,
yeah, Burning Man, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. that approach the scale of AirVenture, and yet it's really this little cult of people who get flying.
It's really true. Burning Man is one comparison. Sturgis, the Harley rally in South Dakota, is probably another one that we've been compared to through the years, just where everybody who has a passion for something, a certain particular thing, descends on this one place, and it becomes a community for that one week out of a year.
So how do you manage that? Like, I imagine, even being an airport, there's some risk involved there, and the emergency crew or a police force or, you know, fire departments. How do you, you know, ensure safety for campers, and what is all those, that logistics like for something this size?
Yeah, that's a year-round process, too. It really is. And we've got a great working relationship with the city of Oshkosh, the police and fire crews there, with the Winnebago County Sheriff's Department. We work with the State Patrol, all of that, the local fire departments around. And a lot of it is self-contained. There is firefighting apparatus right on the field. We're fortunate at Whitman Regional Airport that there is one of the major fire stations in Oshkosh right on the airport with those teams trained in airport emergencies. And if you'll notice during the air show, we always have the fire trucks parked on the north end of the airport, but also right by the announcer stand, right out there on the flight line by the air show trailer, you'll see a couple of fire trucks right there. You know, thinking back about some of the mishaps that we've had through the years, a lot of it you can almost tally into people not flying the airplane until it's stopped. You know, you think about some of the stall spins, somebody turning just a bit tightly, a little bit of get-there-itis sometimes in there. You think about the number of operations, and we work very hard with the FAA and with the airport officials and everybody else to look at the operations each year to make sure they're as safe as possible. And, you know, this is a little thing, call out to all the pilots out there. First of all, okay, guys, if you have the NOTAM in your hand right now, make sure you read it and memorize it. Because, you know, it's never the same NOTAM year after year. Much of it's the same, yes, but it's important to read it through to find out what differences might be coming along, because you look at that each year and say, are there areas where we can be safer? So you take a look at that, and it's an amazing credit to the pilots that come in, to the controllers that work the event, all the pink shirt guys and gals that work the tower, and for what they do to keep themselves separated, keep your head on a swivel, keep the airspeed up, keep the nose up, all of those type of things that you need to be doing out there. And they do it very well again and again and again. And you know, the pilots all understand that flying to Oshkosh and landing at Whitman is a different animal than much of the year. And it's very important to have your skills. If you're flying 10 hours a year, and four of them are flying back and forth to Oshkosh, I'd probably recommend you get a few more hours under your belt. Just to and maybe fly to the local Class C airspace or something just to get yourself acclimated, because it is a different environment, and really it is a credit to everybody. And we have had things happen. You hate to say it, human error comes into it so much. And you know, and I think of some of the mishaps where you do turn a bit tightly, or you know, you're not watching the airspeed, or you're saying, I'm at Oshkosh. Boy, it's great to see the runway and all those airplanes. And you stop thinking, and we all know this in aviation, you stop thinking for a microsecond, and now you're in trouble. Yep. So, you know, stay ahead of the airplane all the time. Or somebody decides they want to get out just before the airport closes, and suddenly you're not thinking about good aviation skills, you're thinking about, I want to do this. And as we all know and have had friends get into those type of situations, that can bite back in a hurry. So it's are there statistical probabilities? Certainly. You know, you take a look at those things, and they can happen. But the safety record and what the pilots do and what the airport officials do and the FAA do, boy, it's a tremendous event for everything that happens. And we all have that emergency plan out there for aviation accidents, for during the air show, and we hope to God that we never have to pull it out each year. And, you know, you just put it together and hope it's, you don't have to use it.
It's so many moving parts. It's so impressive that it runs so smoothly every year. I've been many years, and I've seen some people do some ground loops. I think there was a—
I know you really can't trust tailwheel pilots.
Yeah, really, right? But you're right. It's people that that come in, but you have the program. There's so many safety concerns, and you have a plan. Or there seems to be something in place for almost every scenario, including the arrivals, the people that are camping, the air show, the night air show. It's just so many moving parts, and it's so impressive. It just seems like. And with so many people there, it just seems like such an overwhelming task when it comes to safety for this. And it's so impressive that you guys are, keeping up with it. So that's awesome.
Well, thank you. It's
I'm going to definitely give you a hat tip from the safety standpoint. I mean, there's two things. If I were to ever crash an airplane at an airport, that's the place to do it, because it's like I'm going to get response immediately. At the same time, if I'm ever going to crash, I don't think I want 300,000 witnesses, and probably 40,000 cell phones all recording my ineptitude, there's a certain, I will definitely say I do not feel, again, as an aviation safety person, I definitely don't feel that Air Venture is dangerous, or that I feel uncomfortable there. And I feel actually, just like I said, if I'm going to crash, that's the place to crash, because you're going to get rescued instantly.
It doesn't even cross my mind. It doesn't even cross my mind when I'm there. Dick, how many years have you been to Oshkosh?
Well, this is now going to be number 27 on staff, and probably, I think it's number 32 overall.
Okay. So I gotta ask you, what is your most memorable moment at Air Venture? Out of all of these.
Oh, boy. And some leap right to mind. One of my favorites, and this was back in 1994 when we had the salute to Apollo that year. We had 15 Apollo astronauts here for the 25th anniversary of the first moon landing. And I'm driving along, and I was just, I was low man on the totem pole at the time. And, could you run over there and pick up Charlie Duke from Apollo 16? Okay, sure, fine. Well, we're coming back, and the 5-minute conversation I had with him, and he told this story later on that night, he was telling his wedding ring story. And, and if you've ever heard this one about how he thought he lost his wedding ring at space, and then it floated out the capsule, but the astronaut going out to pick up the camera on the outside of the capsule was backing up, his wedding ring hits the back of that guy's helmet. And in space, of course, the momentum changes that swiftly. It comes back into the capsule. Charlie grabs it and takes it away. And he still says to this day, I don't think to this day Dottie believes me on this story. And, just a moment like that, or, seeing things when the Concorde came in. And the last time was in 1998, but to have that airplane come in during that. And every year has its own special little thing to it. And some of the best memories I have are with people that are not famous at all, but they finished an airplane or they did something and brought it in, and you started talking with them. And you realize how much emotion there is in them bringing the airplane to Oshkosh, especially if it's a home built or a restoration or something like that, that you spend time with them and you just go, wow, this is something special. And, I take a look at some of that. One of my favorite moments had to be 2009 when the A380 came in, and it was parked on the ramp for a while. And talking about the volunteers as we were before, the A380 had to leave on Friday about 2 o'clock. And so it got out, and it's a mammoth airplane. So all the stuff that goes with it, you have to clear the entire Boeing Plaza area of everybody except essential ramp crew, get the airplane out, get it started. In 90 minutes, the ramp crew had pushed the A380 out. It had started, had left. A C-5 and a C-17 had landed. They had parked those, set it all up, and people were allowed back in, all in 90 minutes.
Holy wow. Cow.
And that's what those volunteers do. I mean,
I guess that's what you can do with an army of volunteers.
Yeah.
Beyond an army, a disciplined army. I mean, That is
For the most part. Yeah. For the most part, yeah, they're disciplined. When
we struck a nerve all of a sudden.
But they're a fun group. I've gotten to know many of them through the years, and a wonderful group. And I can tell you, they are absolutely committed to saying, "We're going to make this work." And you talked about some of the safety and some of the things that go on. And it all goes back to Paul Poberesny. I remember a sign that he had hanging in his office, about safety number one priority. And rule number one is don't do nothing dumb. And that's it. You know, you start there and just think about it and don't get too concerned about where you have to be and what you have to do. Make sure it's safe first. And then we can worry about everything else.
Dick, is AirVenture starting to feel like a job to you, or is this something that, you know, is your job a vacation every year? Is this like a dream job?
It is a dream job. You know, it's funny. I did not come out of an aviation family. I always liked airplanes. And, I came to the first AirVenture back in the late 70s, just a high school kid straight out who liked warbirds and biplanes, had never seen a home-built aircraft in my life, and, you know, saw one. And I think it was a very easy. And I remember saying, what the heck is that? And the owner was there and he didn't chase me away. And he said, no, it's a home-built aircraft. To which I responded in that 18-year-old bravado, people build their own airplanes. Who'd want to do that? And he didn't chase me away. He said, well, let me show you what we do here. This is all fiberglass and everything. And that's one of those transformational moments when you're a kid that the adult didn't chase you away and said, you know, don't bother me, kid. Go away. Go look at something else.
Right.
And did that. And but, you know, getting back to your question, it's – there are days, like any job, it's a job. There is work. Mm-hmm. This time of year, sometimes I look out the office window and see the guy just mowing the grass in the shade going back and forth. I go, boy, that would be nice. But then I think about the people coming in and the people you get to meet. And when you're in the midst of it, it is, I wouldn't call it a vacation, but I certainly would call it a reunion. In a lot of ways, there's a certain joy knowing that what this group of volunteers and staff do, nobody else in the world does. And there's a great sense of accomplishment in that. And when you hear from people afterwards saying, you know, I never thought I would see this until then, or I brought my granddad who flew during the war. Last year, we got a number of these to see the B-29 and then to see two of them because he was a loadmaster on B-29s or a navigator or something like that. And it just says, wow, we did something that people will remember for a long time. And that's tremendously gratifying and fulfilling in any kind of profession, but to have it there to occur, you know, that's probably what personally, I get out of it more than anything else. And I won't lie to you, though. I do take a vacation afterwards.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. I've got a softball question, but it's kind of rooted in some earnestness, which is I'm sitting here wearing my EAA T-shirt. And it just happens to be a T-shirt that was given to me when I signed up at the 2010, the first AirVenture I was there. I signed up for an EAA credit card at the 2010 AirVenture, and it was that credit card has been the lowest interest rate credit card I've had among any and all. Here's the softball question. What other sponsors do you have that you need to throw a bone to? Because I swear I just did it because it's like, it looks like a good deal short term. It's turned out to be a long-term wonderful opportunity or wonderful choice I made. Now I'm wanting to hear, hey, what other great sponsors do you have?
Well, thank you. And I love these softball questions like this. But first of all, thank you for getting the card and using it. Our marketing people will be very happy. But you take a look at some of the other sponsors. One of them that we've had now for about 15 years is Ford Motor Company. And I have to mention them. They came in and, you know, we had some members ask us, you know, why is a car company here? And it took them a year or two, but Ford understood what we were doing, and they started offering a discount, the X plan, to EAA members to save on vehicles. And I've used it, and it saved me a couple $1,000s on a vehicle. But Ford started to get it, and realizing they had a legacy with the Tri-Motor and the Flivver and building B-25s during World War II, that they had an aviation legacy as well. And they started to use that to understand not only what the EAA crew was like, but also to train their own people when they came in from Dearborn and Detroit, saying, this is why we're here. This is our legacy as well. And they've become an outstanding sponsor for us through the years. And you take a look at people like John Deere, you know, you'll notice the tractors around there are John Deere tractors.
Right.
And we work with some of the local dealers and, you know, outstanding tractors and do a wonderful job for us throughout. And, you know, and then some of the ones more aviation related, you take a look at people like Aircraft Spruce and Specialty, who have been with us for many years, and some of the things they do. In fact, when Paul Poberesny passed away now 5 years ago, and his wife decided that she wanted to sell the house, Aircraft Spruce bought it because they wanted that house to be maintained for the legacy of Paul Poberesny. And so when you're at Air Venture this year, you actually have the opportunity to go on a tour of the Paul Poberesny house, which is about a mile and a half down the road. But you'll get shuttled down there. You see many of Paul's artifacts. And I will say, many of Paul's artifacts, because Paul kept absolutely everything. And he was like that. You know, I remember asking him, Paul, you remember that thing you had in 1967, you know, when the airplanes in Rockford? Oh, hang on, son. I've got that here. Hang on. You know, and he'd go to a drawer and he'd pull out the original manuscript for it. And so things like that. So you can go out there. So, you know, those type of people, big and small. And what a lot of those sponsors do is actually help provide either equipment or funding that help us keep the admission prices low and keep the membership price low at $40 a year, which I think it's been almost now for 20 years. So it's something that, great kudos. I appreciate you asking it. And hopefully it has a benefit like you've had with the credit card.
Oh, God. Like I said, it's seriously, if I dumped every single last credit card and only kept one, it would be the EAA U.S. Bank credit card. It's got the best interest rate. It's just been, it's just been wonderful.
You understand I'm writing all this down right now as a testimonial. So just keep going.
Oh, God. Yeah. What's funny is,
Well, people understand as well that, you know, the pilots are here and they're looking for these type of things and they're ready to buy. One thing that's come along the last couple of years, especially for those in the home build area, is something called SolidWorks that we've put in our portfolio for members, that you can download the SolidWorks, a computer assisted design program that helps a lot if you're building an airplane or restoring an airplane. And we've had thousands of people sign up for that. And now there are seminars at Oshkosh each year for the people who have signed up for it and those who will, about how to use it more effectively. And so it's one of those situations where a company came to us and said, we've got this, will this help your members? And it's worked out very, very well. And those are the kind of partnerships you look for all the time.
You know, one of the things when I go back and the, you know, the big thing I remember from 2015 was the going in and doing the decompression chamber. It wasn't decompression. It was just the
high altitude Oklahoma.
Simulation with nitrogen. And that was a really good learning experience. I also did the flight simulator, did some IFR, loggable IFR there. And that was a useful, and I still remember that. And I know it's going to sound absolutely cliche, because there are so many things. It's drinking from a fire hose to walk down the fire, or you know, to go to the square and see all the major exhibit airplanes, to attend a seminar or two that are things you just really not going to have available to you in the normal civilian world in any other place other than Air Venture. But going to Camp Bacon and just hanging out. To be honest, I'm really looking forward more than anything else to seeing all the people who I've met before. And I, like I said, it's so cliche, it almost makes me choke. because, but at the same time, I had just stayed in Camp Bacon the whole time I was at Air Venture and just only ventured out once, one adventure a day for one air show in particular, or one seminar, or one, you know, hey, I'm going to go to the safety seminar and fly the simulator there, or hey, there's a new announcement, go to this particular booth and pick up a good deal or whatever, you know, to be honest, it literally is the camaraderie of hanging out with the people you've met at Air Venture that you come back to, and they're there at the same campsite and you can reconnect. It used to always bother me because it's like, oh God, they always say that. It's just like, that's just so cliche. And at the same time, that's what I'm looking forward to in 2020.
We love you too, Mike.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's really interesting about Air Venture is you have hundreds of thousands of people attending, and they all have their own idea of what a successful visit will be. And you know, you're exactly right when you were talking about some people stay in the campground or just go down to the forums. And we have people that never leave the seaplane base 5 miles away, right, and they go down there and they spend the entire week down there or in the Warbirds area or just hanging out with the home builders or whatever it happens to be. So one of the great challenges, but one of the great successes, is creating an event where everybody, no matter how large or small you want to make the event, you can have success in the event, whether it's big or whether it's small. And that's a challenge every year, but it's one that I guess we embrace and say, okay, let's make it worthwhile and fulfilling for what you want to do as well. And that's part of it.
You know, I've been six years now, I think, and I still – there's still Groupie. Things that are on my to-do list that I just don't get around to doing because there's so much to do in Air Venture. Getting the helicopter ride is on my to-do list. Last year, I finally knocked out the Ford Tri-Motor ride. But this year, I'm going to try to do that helicopter one because it's one of the few things that's still, after all these years, something I haven't done yet at Air Venture.
Well, you know, one of the other things that's hilarious is you also get all the things that happen at Air Venture that you aren't even planning for. I landed. I had to go get my camping permit and basically sign up because I landed and was in the vintage area. And it's like, okay, what do I do? It's like, okay, I'm going to go get my campsite and then I'm going to go get my credentials. Oh, there, look, that's Bert Rutan. Yeah. you know, the fact that I'm not trying to find any particular major event, and yet there I walk on the grounds, I land my airplane, I secure my airplane, I get my camping permit, and now I'm walking to the press area and I walk past Bert Rutan 20 feet away.
The first year I brought my wife, we were walking down one of the little campground roads on site, and someone talking with Bob Hoover just comes out of this trailer, walks across right in front of us. He says, hi. I say, hi, Bob. And he gets in a car and they drive off. And it's like, that just happened. That just happened.
One of my favorite memories of Oshkosh was, I don't remember what year it was. It's probably 3 or 4 years ago. And I have to thank you, Dick, for this. You arranged it. Was Bob Hoover was doing a press conference, and I got to sit in on that. And as it was winding up and he was leaving, and he was still a bit frail and stepping down the two steps from the stage, I stuck my arm out to help him down. And I think, Dick, you may have been on the other side of him at that point.
Yeah, I might have been. I remember that press conference, yes.
And he stepped down. He had 1 foot on the second step and 1 foot on the stage, and he stops to tell the story.
Yep, I remember that.
Then he takes him one step down and gets on the ground, and there's another story. And that was the best experience of my Oshkosh career, I think.
It was. Those are the kind of things that happen, you know, and I tell people I have hundreds of 30-second heartfelt conversations with friends during Oshkosh because that's about how much time one has. But there are those moments. You talk about that. We had, it was 2007, in fact, Morgan Freeman came out. Morgan Freeman has his pilot certificate, and a friend invited him out to Oshkosh for 2 days. And so we, in order to prevent the media from bothering him all the time, we said, okay, we're going to have one media availability. It's going to be 20 minutes long. And there's a photo of me pointing to a reporter, and standing next to me is Morgan Freeman. And I say, okay, you know, Mr. Freeman will take the next question, ask the question. And of course, Morgan Freeman answers in that Morgan Freeman voice. And that's the, and that is the actual voice. You know, when you're talking with him casually, that comes out of his mouth, and you go, "I'm talking to Morgan Freeman. This is great."
So, what's your daily schedule like on a typical AirVenture day? Maybe like what's like your Friday schedule with your responsibilities here at AirVenture?
Well, I often tell people that I get up in the morning very early and I look at my schedule and then I laugh because nothing I do is going to match that. And so I just move on from that point. But usually, you know, the morning TV shows are there very early. They're there about 4:30 with the trucks and so forth. So I'm usually on the grounds between 4:15 and 4:30 in the morning and Wow. do some of the morning media things, because those morning shows start at 5 o'clock, and you do some interviews and make sure the people that are supposed to be there for interviews have arisen in time to be there for the interviews. And a lot of media things up until about 8 o'clock, a lot of morning shows, a lot of radio and so forth. And then we have news conferences throughout the day with exhibitors, with people like Bob Hoover, with the FAA administrator, you know, whoever it happens to be. And that will fill a lot of the time. Last year, Friday was funny you mentioned Friday, because that one was very unique. Last year on Friday, of course, we had the Blue Angels flying in the air show. We had the seven Apollo astronauts here for the reunion. And so they had a media availability in the early afternoon, and then their big Theater in the Woods program at night. Of course, last year, Stan Lee, inventor of Spider-Man, shows up and gives us a superhero for our Young Eagles program, Avior, which you'll see a lot more of at Oshkosh this year. At the same time, at the Stan Lee thing, which was about 11:30, 12 noon on that Friday, standing in the crowd, wearing sunglasses, a hat, with his children and his in-laws with him, and nobody noticing that he's there, is the richest man in the world, Jeff Bezos, because his rocket, Blue Origin, there, and he was there to show the Apollo astronauts the rocket. And so this was, and people say, God, what kind of day was that? I said, it was Friday. That was Friday right there.
Right. Oh, God. That's amazing.
Well, Stuart,
you do have a good job. You know, I understand it is work when it's work, because, you know, hard days are hard days. But at the same time, that's not too bad to look back and see, recall memories like that.
It is. And, you know, and I always say, like, some days it's work, but when it's good, there's nothing better.
Yeah.
Well, Dick, when is the show again? What are the dates?
July 23rd through the 29th. So, you know, you start looking at it and it's coming up quick. And so, and you know, people, still opportunities. I tell people, go to EAA.org, EAA.org, click on the AirVenture tab and everything you want to see. And, also we've got an app, so you can download the app and find out, where things are, what time they are, what changes, what the schedules are and so forth.
Dick, I want to give you credit for one other thing, which is, your call brought us all back together in a way that is very, very AirVenture-like, in that we reunited not because we were apart for any particular reason other than we just all got busy. And thank you very much for reaching out to us to take our podcast and make us come back to life again.
Well, it's Oshkosh. You know, that's the way it works.
Exactly. What's funny is it's like, that's so Oshkosh.
If someone wants to volunteer, is there still opportunities there, or is it too late for that?
No, not at all. We'd love to have people volunteer. They can either go through the website and contact our volunteer coordinator, or just come on out. If you're in the campground, for instance, right next to the Red Barn store, there's a volunteer center there. Or at the main gate, you can ask, where do I volunteer? And you can come down and sign up. And some people love to volunteer for the stuff they do all year, and because they feel they're good at it and they can help. Other people like to come to Oshkosh and volunteer on something that they have absolutely nothing to do with for the rest of the year, and they have a great time doing that. And you know, you take a look at what everybody does, you know, and we even have volunteers that make lunches to feed the other volunteers. I mean, those are the kind of things that go on here, and it happens again and again and again. And you might be driving a tram, you might be giving directions to people, you might be helping with ground briefing, you might be parking airplanes. it's just about anything and everything that you get to do. And like I said, the volunteers are tremendous, and they work so hard, and you just start to find a rhythm, and then suddenly the week's over, and it goes so quickly once you're in the midst of it.
Well, you know, I want to create one hashtag for you to track. Hashtag so Oshkosh. And that's the, I walked in, I'm checking into my campsite, and I walk past Bert Rutan. So hashtag so Oshkosh. I mean, yeah. I can't imagine that there aren't a gazillion stories like that, you know?
Absolutely. There are, you know, and you find them all over, and people do that or reunite with a pilot friend they haven't seen for 20 years and so forth. So
there you go. Hashtag so Oshkosh. I want to push that through the social media for this event. Because it is. It's a unique event that creates unique experiences. And I think actually, to be honest, that hashtag will capture a lot of what Oshkosh is about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll certainly bring it up. I think we can do something with that.
Well, Dick, I'd like to thank you for joining us. It's been a lot of fun, and we hope to see you soon at the Big AirVenture 2018.
Well, thank you so much, and hope to see everybody out on the flight line. And if you're coming up here, fly safe, drive safe, and we'll see you all up, because it's so Oshkosh.
Thank you for listening to the Pilot's Journey podcast. We'd love to hear your comments, suggestions, and experiences. You can reach us at our website at www.pilotsjourney.com or leave us a voicemail at 330-3JOURNEY. That's 330-356-8763. You can also follow me as Pilot Stu, that's STU, on twitter.com.
You can reach me on Twitter as CFI Stu, that's STEW, also at CFIStu.com.
And you can follow me on Twitter as ID Mike.
You can also follow us collectively on Twitter or Facebook as Pilot's Journey.
The podcast is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. Please consult your own qualified flight instructor before attempting anything discussed in this podcast.
And remember to enjoy the journey.
Copyright 2018, Fully Stewed Productions.
And One Mic.
Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
The voice.